This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Oh, hi, my name's Jeanette and I'm now alcohol-free for around 150 days, which is a miracle, to say the least. I've been trying to go alcohol-free for about a decade, on and off, doing a month here, a week here, 2 months here, you know the score. But now I'm 150 days in and absolutely loving it. Life is so much better. Being part of the OTI community has helped me vastly. It's fun. It looks at what you're gaining, not what you're missing out, which was a mistake I made before. I always thought I was missing out on life when I wasn't drinking. Oh my God, how wrong was I? Life is great without a drink. Just try it.
So if you want to join us, go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to Over the Influence. It's absolutely fantastic to have you listening. You're going to be bombarded with a load of northern accents today, so you are in for a treat. If you are listening for the very first time, welcome. Like I said, fabulous to have you listening. Quick reintroduction in a nutshell. My name is Sharon Hartley, based in Lancashire, in the northwest of England. I think I can say now, 4.5 years alcohol free. Took a break from booze back in 2018. That's all it was ever going to be, because why would you ever stop drinking? Turns out it's because it's ace, full stop. A sober life is so much better than a life fueled by alcohol. And people always ask me all the time, so I'll answer the question now. How much did you drink? How bad did it get? What was your rock bottom? And I'll just say, I drank too much, too often, and too quickly. Bottle of wine and I, and then some, and then ramped it up at weekends. Like I said, took a break, and here we are singing about sobriety and saying it's all right, you know, not to drink if you don't want to. I don't do this on my own. Ben Anderson, who doesn't look as tired today, which is great. I think there's progress on the new dad front. How you doing, Ben?
Yeah, I'm all right, thank you. I'm Ben. I'm 34. I live in Liverpool. I am dad to Leo, who is 4 months old now and getting better at sleeping. I've heard about this 4 month sleep regression thing, and we're just kind of going to bed every night and just going, please no, please no, please no. But I'm also nearly stepdad to Alfie and Millie, because I'm marrying Jem in the summer, and it was the best decision ever for me to give up booze 2.5 years ago, because I honestly don't know if all of those things that I've just said would have happened if I carried on drinking. I was a classic binge drinker. I didn't drink every day, but when I went out for a couple, I'd probably stay for a couple more, and a couple more after that, and a couple more after that. And you know what? Sometimes there'd be no consequences at all. Sometimes I'd get pissed and I'd say something stupid. I'd do something stupid. I'd hurt people when I thought I was being funny. I'd damage relationships. And it was random. You know, sometimes it would be fine. Sometimes it wouldn't be. And I just wanted to take that out of my life completely. Best decision I ever made. Delighted to be 2.5 years alcohol free. And I'm really, really excited to talk to today's guest.
Actually, today's guest, I mean, obviously, is here to talk about drinking and about alcohol free life. Right at the end of this podcast, if we've got time, Ben, John might be able to give you some top tips about shredding for the wedding. And meal prep.
Yeah. I've got 7 months, John. I am shredding for the wedding, and I'm going to hit that target. I've gave up booze and I said, right, now's the time. I'm going to finally hit that weight loss goal that I've had for years and years and years and never done anything about. And I've never been closer, John, but it's the final push now. Shaz, who is our guest today?
So our guest today, it is John Clark, a.k.a. the Meal Prep King. I've got your books on my shelf in the kitchen. John, I've yet to start the meal prepping. Been too busy with alcohol-free life. But anyway, we'll talk about all that later. John, welcome to the podcast. It's fantastic to have you here. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, I get quite a few people asking me to do podcasts, and this one is something I feel extremely passionate about, because with having such a large following, you never know who's listening. You never know who's watching. And even if you speak to help one person through it, it's definitely worth doing. So this is something I wanted to do.
Well, I'm chuffed to bits, absolutely chuffed to bits. I know we've got a lot to talk about. As Ben said before we started recording, we do talk about the joys of sobriety and we sing about all the good stuff. But quite often with alcohol comes a load of shit as well. So we're going to talk about it all today. Yeah. Before we get into all that, John, you said there that you wanted to talk with us on Over the Influence because it's a passion, something that's really important to you now. So for anybody that doesn't know, just tell us a little bit about your story, who you are, the meal prep king. Like you said, you've got a huge following. Why are you here at Over the Influence?
Drinking's always been a huge problem of mine. I mean, I've hit it very, very well. You know, when I listen to you guys tell me about, you know, where you started and where it kind of ended, I feel that I was way past that. You know, I mean, that was kind of happening. I mean, I know whether there's no right or there's no like kind of worse or different in my head. If it's affecting your life, it's a problem. But I basically lost a lot of weight. I lost 9 stone. I met a girl, helped her lose 6 stone. And we kind of built this brand, the Meal Prep King. And now we help inspire people all over the world. I'm extremely confident, well-spoken. I look all right, I think. So nobody would know that I was kind of drinking to the absolute rock bottom behind the scenes. I was extremely clever at hiding it because I would be on and off. When I listen to people say, but binge drinking, it can be anything, but mine was, the next step was death. There's no two ways about it. And I decided to stop for a number of reasons. I was losing everything. And I'm excited for the first time in my life. I mean, I've built a brand. I'm a Sunday Times best-selling cookery author. I've built a business. I've inspired people all over the world. And I think to myself, without sounding, if I can achieve that whilst being pissed, what can I achieve by being sober? That's something that really, I'm thinking, you know what? Let's just see what you can achieve when you're sober. Because if you're a Sunday Times best-selling author and nobody knew, I'm on podcasts with Scott Mills. I'm doing things with people I never thought. It's a huge opportunity. And I was basically just pissing it up the wall. Somebody turned around and said, you know, what do you reckon you could get if you were sober? I'm like, challenge accepted. And, you know, I can't believe it took me so long to do, to be honest with you. You know, I lost a lot of money. I lost a lot of contracts, a lot of self-respect, but it was a very small price to pay to put that bottle down. I wouldn't have been here to speak about it otherwise.
Can we talk about what you mean by losing the contracts, losing the money, losing the self-respect? Is there a moment that you're referring to there, John?
Well, I lost last year. I mean, I can narrow it down to what I lost. Well, I say narrow it down. I lost the closest person to me in the world was a guy called Frank. And he was like my dad, my granddad, my best friend, my savior. I met him when I was 17. Long story short, it was my employer who sacked me for drinking. And we stayed friends ever since. And I loved him more than my own family. And he died last year. I've tried to take a lot of positives from that because I knew he was going to die. I could see it coming. I had time to say goodbye. Some people don't get that opportunity. So I am thankful for that. And he inspired me to be who I am. So I lost him. He died, which a lot of people around me was panicking and worried because they knew when he died, that was the time when I would really go all out. People would see me drink for years and they think, shit, when he dies, what's going to happen to him? I won't be too far behind. I promised him I wouldn't drink when he was dying. And he said, I'll try and find a way to send you a signal not to drink. And irrelevant. I want to make him proud whether he's here or not. So I lost my girlfriend because I said things online. I did things very publicly and humiliated her. My two daughters, I lost a long time ago, although I was clinging on to seeing them and having bits. They've been seeing me do things to drink over the years, which hasn't been good. I lost my contracts with my publisher, which were, you know, worth a lot of money. Contracts with other people, the respect of my followers, having such a huge following. You have a duty. If you have a following, you have a duty to provide accurate information. And if you're going to do that as a job, you're going to inspire people, then although they need to see the good and the bad, I'd let myself go to a point where I didn't care whether I was upsetting people or not. And for me, I lost all that in one go. And I thought to myself, there's two ways up now. It's up or down, sink or swim. And I do very, very, very well when I'm backed into a corner, whether that's business, whether that's relationships. When somebody puts me into a corner and there's no way out, then I make sure I create a way out. And that's something I've always done. And I thought, well, why, what better time to try and apply that in my life? I've stopped smoking. I've lost weight. I inspire people to lose weight. All pretty easy. Just applying the same rules. You find something that's more important to you. And what's more important to me, I have a duty. I've You know, look, I miss my kids. Whether I get them back or not is irrelevant. Whether I'm sober for the rest of my life is relevant. And I don't think everything happens for a reason. I'm not a massive fan of that word sentence, but I'm definitely a fan of some things happen for a reason. And my friend said, you know, if you've lost all that and you are sober now, wasn't it a very small price to pay? So that's kind of where I'm at.
John, how the hell have you managed to, and I don't say this flippantly, bounce back from all that? Because some of the things that you've talked about there, and it's so painful to hear about loss. You know, so sorry to hear about Frank and the situation with your daughters. And then, you know, in terms of business, the publishing deal with Penguin. When I first saw a post about you, we'll talk about this now, about your Instagram lives. And I've got your books on my kitchen shelf.
Did you want to rip them up and throw them away?
You know what? Yeah. Yeah, I did actually at first, because I thought, freaking hell, he said what about women? Jesus Christ, that doesn't get much more offensive, you know. And I genuinely felt really sad and really pissed off.
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, I am massively open to criticism, and I deserve it.
I've not finished my sentence. Oh, sorry,
I talk over everybody.
No, you're fine. And you know what? Apology accepted. Thank you. My point was, and I saw all this.
Yeah.
And then I saw your post on social media about the alcohol. And so it wasn't a case of me going, oh, well, that's all right then, because he was obviously pissed.
Yeah.
I knew there was much more to it. And I thought, Christ, this is a rock bottom. Oh, my God, this is as bad as it gets. And I read, now you can correct me if I'm wrong, because I know that stuff gets put out there.
Yeah, yeah.
That you haven't seen those lives and that you don't need to look back because you know what's occurred through alcohol and you don't really need the reminder. Where are you now on that? How do you feel about all that happened?
Well, it's like the way I kind of explain this, it's like being on the back of a motorbike. If you can ride a motorbike, you feel better on the front than the back. Nobody likes having a backy on a bike. You're not in control. If you die, somebody else is in control. Now, when everything was happening, I'd lost control over my daughters. I'd lost control over my personal health, my mental health. I'd lost control of everything. I was getting newspaper, media people, TV. There were people trying to contact me from everywhere, wanting conversations. I had humiliated my girlfriend. Everything was happening around me. There was nothing I could do. But the one thing I could control, not watching the lives, was the only thing I could control. Now, I get a lot of people saying to me, you should watch them. How dare you not watch them? You should watch them. And I get other people saying, you shouldn't watch them because obviously you know what you're like when you've having a drink, blah, blah, blah. Now, obviously having Charlotte, it was the most important thing in the world to me with Frank and my kids. You know, I had a really good, and losing all those people, I've heard bits and bobs. I've seen bits of screenshots. I've seen what's been said. I've seen memes and all sorts of stuff. I don't really need to know the ins and outs. I just know it was a piece of shit. And to be honest with you, when was the last time anybody got to that degree drunk? You actually took what they were saying as with any kind of, with a pinch of salt. I mean, I don't think I've ever spoke to anybody or listened to anybody drunk and thought, you know what, you really meant that. And then I get people saying to me, the truth comes out when you're pissed. What a load of rubbish. That's like the complete opposite. Maybe if you've had two or three glasses of wine and you're having a conversation, you fancy someone, you may say to them you fancy them or something like that. But when you're 8 bottles of wine deep, you don't even know what day it is. You're shitting the bed, you're pissing the bed, and you're absolutely throwing up. And, you know, I was in a position where I don't remember saying certain things. Doesn't mean it didn't happen. I just know I need to move forward from it. And always looking back, it's just never going to happen. I am sorry for people, but my social media following has grown again. And the people that stayed with me understand. A lot of people have followed me for years. And it's not something that happened every week. This is something that happened on a one occasion or two occasions of just being absolutely obliterated. So people have said, you know, this is not John. This is not the meal prep king. You know, we've watched him for 5 years. He's inspired us and blah, blah, blah. I've had people setting fire to the books. I've had people setting them back. I've had such negative, but I accept it. I accept that I was wrong. But if I switch this camera off now and go and ask myself in a room, do I really think those things? Anybody knows me knows no. But I can understand why it would annoy people, especially when you're an influencer and you've been out and spent your hard-earned money on a book and then it starts ranting off. But 99% of people could see that I was in desperate need of some support. I didn't get it. So I had to give it myself, and kind of that's where I'm at. But I am sorry, Sue, you as well.
John, I am very happy to put my hands up and say that I think that in vino veritas, you know, wine makes you tell the truth. When you boozed up, you say what you really... I can say that that's bollocks from my personal experience. Yeah. Because I would, I said in my intro at the beginning, sometimes I'd go out and it'd be absolutely fine. I'd come back, go to bed, wake up in the morning feeling like shit and write the rest of the weekend off.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have done anything or said anything. Sometimes I'd come back and it wouldn't even be that I didn't believe the things that I'd said. I didn't recognise the person that had said them. Do you know what I mean? Like, it just didn't align with who I am. And I think I believe you when you say,
yeah,
I don't believe those things in my heart at my core, because I can relate to it. You know,
I've
maybe not everyone
daughters.
Will agree, but I can relate.
I've got two daughters who in the right mind, you know, I love my daughters with. I grew up without a dad. I mean, if I was to sit there and do a podcast on my life or write a book on my life, it would be that long. Nobody would watch it. There's a lot going on. I'm not saying it's an excuse. I mean, I'm not using anything as an excuse, but there are a reason as to why certain things. I mean, I haven't watched The Lies, but I've been told off a lot of people that from who did watch everything in depth, and a lot of females. In fact, 84% of my followers are female and still are. So a lot of people have said, I mean, I was splitting up with Shelter, so that was kind of a painful thing. And I was angry at not women, just one, even though Shelter had done nothing wrong. In my head, and the way you drink, you just kind of blame everybody else, as you probably know. It's everybody else's fault, not your own. And then I saw a few people were kind of saying stuff on The Lives. Apparently there were comments coming up, and then I was obviously biting at those comments. And then obviously I was arguing, and a lot of people have messaged me behind the scenes and said, John, did you see any of the comments? Because people were clearly trying to get a reaction out of you. And I know what I'm like as a Scouser. You know, I know what my family are like, who all speak Scouse. And, you know, you can't really hold your tongue. But me as an influencer, I should really have respect for that, and I should have been able to hold my tongue. Alcohol just takes that away from me.
Alcohol is shit. Full stop, end of sentence.
I don't think it's a coincidence that every time you walk into Tesco's or Asda, I'm going to say this on the podcast because I want people to think about this. I don't think it's a coincidence that every time you walk into Tesco's, Asda, Sainsbury's, it's on offer straight away as soon as you walk in. You walk through the door. When was the last time you saw, a zucchini or courgette or whatever? I speak to that many different people. You know, a cucumber on offer when you walk in the door. It's alcohol and chocolate. It's shit all the time. And then when you come to try and get help for alcohol, I don't care what anybody says, the help doesn't exist. It isn't there. And we live in a society where the tax on alcohol is that huge. You should be able to treat every alcoholic in the world 10 times over. I made 8 phone calls to try and get some help, and in the end, I didn't get any. So I realised very quickly I had to help myself.
How did you do that, John? How did you help yourself? Because it's a pretty desperate situation. You know, we can move on from The Lives. We've talked about that.
Yeah.
But all I will say is, looking at your face today and looking at your face snapped back then, it's just sad. You're just riddled with sadness. It's just obvious. You can see it now. Now you've got clear skin. You've got a spark in your eyes. And one thing I want to talk about as well in just a sec is that one of my most favourite sayings in the world is the best apology is changed behaviour.
Yeah,
I think that this sounds like it applies massively in your case. How did you help yourself, John? Because it can be a torrid time for people, yeah, if they are screaming out for help and it's not there.
At my worst, I was drinking at least, I was ordering 8 bottles of wine a day from Uber. So they were dropping
off. A day?
A day, yeah. I wouldn't drink 8 bottles in a day. I'd lost all concept of time. So for me, it would be a case of, I mean, to be honest with you, I was ordering Uber to the front door because I didn't want to leave. And then Uber would deliver 8 bottles of wine. They'd be like, oh, you're having a party tonight? I'm like, yeah, mate, I'm having a party. It was breakfast. And I didn't want to, and I just watched it going worse and worse and worse. Days I didn't get into bed. My hygiene was suffering. I'm an immaculate person. I'm very clean, very tidy, very organized. It just isn't me in every way, shape or form. So the alcohol was just taking over in a way that you don't even see it coming. You just, one minute your tolerance just grows. I mean, how far could that tolerance possibly go? You know, how was I saw 8 bottles of wine I was ordering. So what I would do, the typical day for me would be I'd drink a bottle of wine, might be on the phone to someone, then I'd drink another one. Sometimes I'd be vomiting, I'd be struggling to keep it down, I'd be vomiting blood, and then I'd choose it over food. I'd be shaking everywhere until I got that first bottle in. I'd have miniatures because I think to myself, well, miniatures are definitely better for you than a big bottle. But I'd drink 10 of the miniatures, which is the same as a bottle. You just tell all these things. And I had a friend of mine come round. The Lives had happened. My girlfriend, Shell, is super, well, ex-girlfriend, she was like super, super supportive of me. And even she'd washed her hands of me. So my friend came around and said, right, this has to stop. And obviously people can tell you to stop what they want. Unless you want to stop, it ain't ever going to happen.
Yeah, it's got to come from you, hasn't it?
Yeah, people can lock somebody up in a room, they'll find a way. So I put myself into rehab. I'd lost all my contracts and everything else. So I wasn't panicking about money. I still have money. I was just not as well off as I was. And I thought, it doesn't matter. I don't care if I have to go back and if I have to go on job seekers allowance. Whatever I need to do to get this sorted needs happening. So I put myself into rehab, paid $8,500. And I rung my friend and I said, right, can you take me to rehab on Wednesday? I'm leaving my house, keys, my car, everything. I didn't have the little dog by then. So I just said, can you just take over my life and I'll go to rehab? And I sat there overnight and I sat in my living room and I thought to myself, I've got to be honest with myself now behind closed doors, which is, it's very easy to lie to yourself because obviously you just, you're in your own head a lot, aren't you? And I thought to myself, well, do I need rehab? Rehab, rehabilitation, because I listened to what they said on the phone. They said that, you know, bringing no deodorant, bringing no aftershave, bringing none of this, blah, 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 this, that, and the other, which I understand. So it's monitored and you're watched and to get you off the alcohol, blah, blah, blah. Now, I don't need help stopping drinking. Never been my problem. You know, Penguin said there's a photo shoot coming up for a book deal. I look fantastic. I'm in the gym 7 days a week. I'm training. I'm eating right. The alcohol's nowhere near. 17 weeks looking good. I'm on camera eating food. Fantastic. Done and dusted. Then I start the drinking. And they tell me you want to sign another contract for a book deal. Yeah, no problem. So I'm back again. Stopping the alcohol for 13, 14 weeks. No worries whatsoever. Then I'd be carnage for 2 or 3 months. I've got money in the bank. Doesn't really matter. So rehabilitation is not what I needed. I had to be honest with myself, did I need rehab? People say, oh, you're this, that, and the other, you've been lying, you're saying you need rehab, and you didn't even go. I didn't go to rehab because I didn't need it. Rehabilitation in the form of immediate stopping, which is what it was. It was 4 weeks for $8,500, and I don't need help stopping drinking. What I needed help with was staying stopped. That's what I needed help with. And I knew that I was honest with myself. Rehabilitation is for some people in an immediate kind of that level of intensity, but it wasn't needed for me. So I thought, I need what I need to do. I don't want to do nothing. I've done this before in terms of stopping drinking for months at a time. I didn't want to just sit there and go. So I tried ringing the NHS, was passed from pillar to post, phone number to phone number, begging for help and saying, I'm desperate, didn't need medication or anything. I said, listen, I've stopped drinking. I can put the bottle down, but I just need some help to keep staying stopped. That didn't work. And I was really disappointed with the NHS on how little support there was available, considering how much taxes on alcohol. So I found a guy in America who charged me $7,500 to work with him as an alcohol sobriety coach online. I don't know whether it worked or not. I was doing it anyway, but I thought for $7,500, I'm doing it. So I got my money back from the rehab, spent it on that, and I just went hell for leather, and I'm hoping it's given me the tools. I feel different this time. I've never stopped this long in 20 years, so I feel different, and I've never been so happy and so busy. Yeah.
How long have you been sober now?
Nearly 6 months.
Amazing.
That's quite incredible.
Find something that's more important to you.
Yeah, I mean, I preach this all the time to people when I'm helping people lose weight. I'm saying, if somebody says, oh, I'm overweight, I want to lose weight, that's not good enough. Just saying you're overweight and you want to lose weight, that's not a good reason. So anybody I know who's lost a significant amount of weight always has a reason above, I want to lose weight. Anybody I know who wants, my friend Sonia who's lost 7 stone, she said that her reason was her health. She's a police officer. Couldn't really do certain jobs anymore, and her knees were hurting. She changed all that. So I tell people to find a reason why they want to lose weight, focus on that, whether they want to set an example to the children, to their employer, they want a new job, they're getting married, they're getting wedding, whatever. So I needed to apply that to the alcohol. I want my girlfriend back. I love Charlotte. I want my life to get better. I want it to be full of inspiration, and I've got such a huge opportunity, even just with my platforms, to help other people. And I realize how bad of a problem this is. I'm just gutted it's taken me so long to get here, but I'm glad I am with him.
We're just going to take a really quick break from this really honest chat with John Clark, aka the Meal Prep King. Loads more to come with John very, very shortly. Actually, listening to this, I've just realised it is episode 100 of Series 3. Now, Series 3 is the series that basically never ended. 100 episodes. episodes later, we are still going strong. This podcast will be free every single Monday, we think, probably until the end of time. And if you've only just found us, do take a listen back. I think in total there's something like 120 episodes. Series one, and then we took a break. Series two, and then we took another break, and then we came back with series three of Over the Influence, and this is episode 100. So thank you so much for listening. If you are enjoying listening to Over the Influence, we would love it if you could head to your podcast provider and give us a review. Let us know what you think. If you fancy five stars, absolutely go for that. A few words about what you think of the podcast as well would be much appreciated. And as always, if you want any further information about what we do online in our Over the Influence community, just have a look online, and it's overtheinfluence.co.uk. And as well, actually, as a quick aside, if you've got any suggestions as to the sort of stuff you'd like to hear on this podcast now, any guests that you think would make a great chat, maybe you listening to this now have got an amazing story to share with us, do not hesitate to get in touch. If you'd like to drop us an email, it's otihq@overtheinfluence.co.uk. I said it'll be brief, I didn't lie this time, and let's get back to the episode with John.
One of the things I'd like to ask you two is, I found it hardest to accept that I can never drink again. That was the hardest part in my head, because you look at other people and think, well, he drinks at weekends and he's all right. My best friend, Andrew, he drinks beer inside of every night. He's fine. He has the one or two, goes to work. I can do it. That was the hardest part for me, is to realize it ain't ever happening again. There's no Christmases. There's no birthdays. There's no got a photo shoot for a book deal. Then you can drink. There's no more using it as an excuse to go back to, because I can't remember the last time I drank for one day. In fact, I don't think there is one, not for the last 20 years anyway. So I just wondered if you two had, if that was a hard thing to accept, you know, never drinking again sounds hard when you're starting, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, but you know what? And I won't speak for Ben, myself and Ben, and so many people that we have spoken to. I never set out to not drink, John. I only ever set out to take a break because alcohol was becoming problematic. You know, I was making decisions based on booze 24/7. And you, like you say, you look around. I was at the age of 44 and you're like, shit, when did that happen? When did that alcohol creep up and bite me on the arse? So I never wanted to remove it. I never wanted a break. Yeah. But like you now, you said at the start of this chat, for the first time in your life, you're excited. You can see a future. You're excited. Absolutely. To where this is going to go. When I was 6 months in, I couldn't have imagined doing a year. And then at a year, two, three, four. Now I know, hand on heart, I don't ever want to drink again. I don't think, you know, oh, what a shame, I can't drink again. Because I tell you why, John, there's so much else to be doing. And what I'd love to do is come back in 6 months' time and speak to you when you've got a year under your belt. And I bet you'll view it differently then. Yeah. And it's still a case of doing the first of everything, the first Christmas, you know, the first birthday, the first wedding without booze. And it gets infinitely better and better and better. I didn't even want to be here alcohol-free, sober, teetotal, call it what you will, because I thought life would be shit and boring and awful. And I swear to God, it's not. It's just it's an absolute gift.
I don't know anybody who's now sober, who used to be an alcoholic or used to be problematic with alcohol. I mean, people say to me, are you an alcoholic? I don't like to give it a name. I just like to say that alcohol causes massive problems in my life. Therefore, it needs to go, whether that's an alcoholic, whether it's a functioning one or not. There's no label. Alcohol was causing shit. It needs to go. That's it. There's no if, buts, or maybes.
You give it one thing, John, and you gain so much more. And what we mean when we say that on this podcast is that if you decide to give up alcohol and you live your life in exactly the same way that you lived it when you were a drinker, the only difference is you haven't got a drink in your hand in situations that you would have done before, then all you think about is that booze that you're not having anymore. The trick is you've got to bring in new positive stuff that you know that you would never have done if you were still a drinker.
I love that.
And for me, I gave up for 3 months. I said I was going to do 3 months and I was going to go back to drinking. I wasn't even going to use it as a reset or a rethink. I was going to do 3 months to prove that I could do 3 months. And then when that 3 months was up, I was going to go back and drink like I was drinking before. Actually, what happened is I got there and I thought, you know, I've got a bit of confidence for this now and I'm seeing the benefits. I'm going to extend it to 6.
Yeah.
Then I got to 6 and went, right, I'm not saying forever. I'm going to extend it to 12.
Yeah.
And for me, it was day 366 that I went, I've got a year of data here now. Me as a non-drinker versus me as a drinker. It's not just that everyone else likes me more as a non-drinker. Jem, you know, my brothers, my parents, my mates. I like myself more as a non-drinker. And therefore I decided to, and it's not many people feel confident enough to do that kind of I'm never drinking again thing. But for me, I kind of had to because it removed the noise for me. I had to realise, and you're right, you look around and you go, it's so fucking unfair that Dave's out the pub and he can just go for a couple of beers.
That gets me really cross because I'm going to jump in. You say that, Ben, and John, you said that. People didn't know you were drinking. We don't know other people's stories. You sort of look on, don't they? You look on and gaze longingly. Oh, look at her just having a sophisticated 2 glasses of wine. You don't know their stories.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But you know what, John? The thing that massively helped me, and I won't keep, you know, the guest is the star of this podcast. Yes, so I will shut up in a minute.
I love listening.
But the moment it clicked for me, truly, that this was forever, my son is 4 months old.
Yeah.
And we didn't know in the pregnancy, he was born with Down syndrome. And you know what? Even after 4 months, like our mindset on it is just, couldn't be in a better place. And I'm chuffed to say that. But the reason that that moment cemented my sobriety in my brain forever, no question, no doubt, is I always had that little thing of, right, I'm seeing all the benefits here, but what happens when something bad happens? When life comes along and takes a swipe and take, you know, whinge you.
Where are you going then?
My response would be go to the pub, escape, get away for a few hours. What happened when we got that diagnosis? He wasn't even a week old and we were told conclusively the blood tests are back and he has got Down syndrome. Yeah. And all the doctors kept saying to us, his life will be different. Your life will be different. But in that moment, I went, the last thing I want to do is go to the pub. I've got to be here and I've got to be here for Leo. I've got to be here for Jem. Yep. I've got to be available and present and fucking ready to deal with whatever's going to come over these next few months.
He deserves that.
That's where
he deserves that. You know, he deserves that kind of level headedness from you. I did a similar sort of thing, and I'm not relating a dog to a child here, but I did a similar sort of thing with my dog. I've always wanted a dog, and I've never had one because I'm a selfish bastard who would just mistreat it drunk, because I don't mean mistreat the dog, but I would mistreat it in a way where it wouldn't get fed when it needs to, it wouldn't get walked when it needs to, it wouldn't get the cur. Now this thing now gets, like, obviously it's slippers, he's just missing a cigar out of his mouth, you know, he literally is like the epitome of just, like, he thinks he's royalty, and he is. And I think that's the way an animal should be treated, and I named him after my friend who died last year, so he's called Frank. And I got him knowing that I'm not going to disrespect that animal. And that was an important, like you say, with your son and stuff. And like I say, I'm not comparing the dog to a human, but that was the same sort of thought process I went through. And then, like you said before, about latching onto things that you would never have done drunk. That's fantastic. I'm so glad you said that, because I've always wanted to do my motorbike test. I've always been a bit wary of motorbikes. You feel a bit superior in a car. I have a seatbelt and a windscreen, but motorbikes always frighten me. But the first thing I did was, right, what do I want to do now? So the first thing I did is I went and passed my motorbike test. I've got a big motorbike set in the garage. I've passed my test, which took me 3 times to pass it, but I was so happy when I did. I've got my little dog. I said to Cheryl, I might even think about starting to have flying lessons to fly a plane. This is something I would never, I'm petrified of flying. So why not fly a plane? But I could do it now. I don't care what anybody says. When you are drinking, if you try and ride a motorbike, you're going to die. But that's just something you can't do. A dog needs looking after. Flying a plane is another thing you can't do, pissed. So I'm just, let's make a list of shit you can't do when you're pissed, and I'm going to do it all.
Sobriety, it's such a crazy journey. It's such a crazy... We're sitting here now and we're laughing about the new hobbies and the new things you do. Yet what you've shared, it doesn't get any worse. You know, you said right at the beginning, John, if you'd have carried on, you wouldn't be here. You'd have, chances are, drunk yourself to death. And you also said in your post, you didn't want to be here. But you stopped.
Do you know what I used to do?
You've owned your shit.
I never really told anybody this. And it's, when I think about it now, how sad it is. I live on my own, obviously with a dog now. But the dog wasn't here then. So I lived on my own And I used to walk past my front door because I lock it all the time, just force of habit, locking my front door. It's just I walk in, lock the door, walk in, lock the door. And when I was so drunk, I used to wobble past my door. And I remember my blackouts were horrendous. My blackouts have got worse over the years. I used to unlock my door just in case I died and somebody needed to get in to kind of, I don't know, scoop me up and throw me in the skip or something, you know what I mean? Or whatever they do with dead people. I used to walk past my door and then think, shit, what if I die and people can't get in? So I need to unlock my door. So I'd unlock my door consciously and leave the door open because if I die, or maybe somebody tried ringing and couldn't get hold of me. And that's a really shit place to be, isn't it? To think to that, for that thought process to go through my head, you know, whatever, die in my sleep, whatever, choke, whatever, I have a heart attack or whatever, you know, somebody needs to be able to get in to kind of, I don't know, put me in a black bag or something, you know, and it's, looking back at that, it's a really scary place to be. I don't think, and I understand why people got angry about my lives and stuff, and under no circumstances am I saying that this is an excuse, but I wish more people had have seen just how bad I was. And I'm glad I got to that point because it's made me realise that, wow, more to life. I mean, in listening to other people now when I'm sober, I'm sure you two guys have had this. Like Charlotte said to me, you know, I never wanted to go on holiday with you. We were together 6 years and never once went abroad. And she's a proper abroad person. She said, if I went abroad, we would be scared that we're stuck in a sort of foreign country and you're drunk all the time. Every hobby that we had was evolved around drink. If we went somewhere for a day out, did they serve alcohol? No, well, I'm not fucking going then. Wetherspoons, let's go to a cafe. Well, we'll go to Wetherspoons. Why Wetherspoons? Because you can get a pint with your breakfast. The breakfast is shit in Wetherspoons. Who wants to go to, they sell beer. And I realised that all the stuff that we were never able to... I'm surprised Charlotte stuck with me for 6 years, to be honest with you. And like I said, this is why I'm excited, because me and Charlotte might be sorting things out. I've said to her, you know, if you want to get back together and sort things out, that'd be fantastic, you know. And if not, I haven't stopped drinking for you. I've stopped drinking for me. Because I don't care what happens in the background. I know I'm staying, stop drinking. If you want to come with me and you can forgive me, great. If not, my little dog was the kind of the nail in the coffin to not drinking. He'd have to go and I'm not getting rid of him, so...
I love everything that you just said. It is important. You know, we talk to our community about this all the time. You know, you've got to look after yourself first and you've got to do this for you. And it seems like you got your head really screwed on with it, John, and that, you know, you're excited about the future and what this... I love that what you said earlier. If I could do all that pissed, then what could I do sober? And it could be... It's the start of the rest now, isn't it?
It is. I've never felt so happy and excited to see... Because any direction I want to go in, I can. You know, if somebody says to me, you can't fly a plane, well, give me the plane. I'm going to learn how to fly this.
But you know what? It's freedom.
Yeah.
Removing alcohol is absolute freedom.
Sobriety delivers everything alcohol promises, somebody said to me the other week.
Love that.
Love that.
My eyeballs nearly popped out of my head when they said that. I went, what? Sobriety delivers everything alcohol promises. And I was like, I'm having that tattooed. I can't remember it. No, I was so excited when I heard it. I can't even remember who said it.
Which bum cheek are you getting the tattoo on? Oh, then,
both. Left or right? Forehead. You know, I was just, it's not even like a cliche or it's not, it's so true. You know, and I don't care what anybody says. If you're predisposed to having like an addictive personality, alcohol's definitely not the thing you want to do. And I've always used that. Well, that's why I don't do drugs. But alcohol's worse. It's surprising how many people do come to me now with alcohol problems. And you hear a lot of people say, I'm so glad you found sobriety. My uncle was just like you. And I'm like, right, you know, is he all right? And I know he's dead. I'm like, bloody hell, sorry to hear that. And then somebody else will say, my daughter was just like you and I wish she'd got help. And I'm like, is she fine? She's dead. And you're like, Jesus. And there's just so many people who come to me now with a drink and they lie about it and stuff like that. And my boyfriend drinks and I keep finding vodka bottles under the mattress and stuff. And I try to be delicate with my responses because I could just tell people, well, you need to stop drinking. That's pretty obvious.
It's not that easy though, is it?
No, you need to find it. And then you just say, is this a problem? I'd say, well, if you're finding alcohol bottles hidden under the mattress, I'd say that's definitely a problem, you know, because I would find it amazing that people can have, I go to people's houses, open the fridge, and there's like half a bottle of wine in the fridge. How the hell do you leave half a bottle of wine in your fridge? You mean you've got a drink cabinet in your house? You know, my friend sister and his brother.
She has a glass. Yeah, it's nuts.
What?
I never understood it. That just wasn't me.
Why? And you know, like, if I remember coming home, I didn't have enough, you know, for me. And I go to Frank's sister. I still keep in touch with Frank's sister. She's like my still connection to him. She's in her 80s and she's great. I love John. And they have a drinks cabinet where you can just go open the cabinet and pour yourself whatever you want. There's loads. I'm like, that's like, how do you have a drinks cabinet and not empty it? I mean, I've been to hotels in the past. I did it in Amsterdam thinking I was clever, emptying the minibar, putting all the miniatures back and stuff. It was 800 quid. I demolished the minibar thinking I was clever. Drunk at the time, it was 800 pounds. And I'm just thinking, I should have got this a long time ago. And I'm really glad to have such an audience to be able to influence other people, because I needed to see other people tell me certain things, but I needed to be ready for it. And I feel really, this is why I wanted to do this podcast, because I get offers a lot to do podcasts, and I kind of feel this is something I'm massively strong about because of just, you know, what damage it does.
And I wanted to say that before we wrap up, because, you know, you've done incredibly well in your life, and you could have flown off to the beach when all this happened. You could have just gone, right, forget that, I'm off, you know, close the Instagram, find somewhere quiet. But instead, you've decided to do the complete opposite thing. Not only have you decided to become alcohol free and, you know, really embrace sobriety, you're doing it openly, you're doing it publicly, and absolutely massive fair play to you for that, John, because it's voices like yours. When you've got the millions of followers online,
yeah,
our mission here at Over the Influence is to normalize sobriety as a choice, rather than people going, oh, what do you mean you're giving up, it's something you're not telling me, just, you know, actually, as a positive lifestyle choice, anyone can benefit from removing alcohol from their life. And for, you know, public figures like you to go and do it is really important to kind of get it out. Oh, bloody hell, have you seen that the meal prep king, he doesn't drink anymore? Oh, blimey, it starts conversations, and that's really important.
Oh, it is.
The other thing to say, just, you know, don't forget, you'll get lots of people contacting you. We get exactly the same. If you've got a good support network around you, people that you can talk to about, you know, how you feel, because you hear some heavy stories, John, as I'm sure you probably have already. You've mentioned some of them, but
yeah.
You know, you've got to make sure, as Professor Green said, you're no good to anyone if you're no good to yourself. So you've got to make sure that you kind of keep in touch with it, and, you know, make sure you've got good people around you.
Yeah. I one of the things with sobriety I was thankful for, now obviously been sober for a bit, I've kind of started noticing things more, is the way I was lucky to have people around me, from followers to close family, friends, even Charlotte. You know, I'm lucky to have had that support network. People would turn up at my house just knocking at the door I hadn't seen for a while and stuff. You know, you find out who your friends are when you're in a place like that. And one thing what concerned me is there's people in the world who were as bad drinking as I was, and they have no one. What happens to them? Where do they go? You know, and nobody just wakes up and thinks, I'm going to get addicted to alcohol. And that's one of the scariest things for me, is you don't see it coming. You're just a drinker in the pub with your mates having this, that, and the other, and blah, blah, blah. And you can switch off at weekends. And then all of a sudden, it's like, I don't know. I remember, you try everything, don't you? I've tried, you know, drinking on my own, not drinking on my own, drinking at the pub only, not drinking at home, only drinking this, not drinking spirits, stick to Stella, don't have Stella, just have Carlin. And you go through all this crap and you think, you know, for me, things like this need talking about in schools, because I was never taught about finances. I was never taught about weight, being overweight, the complications, the alcohol, the addiction side of things. I never got spoke to about any of that. And I think it's important that we kind of, this is why things like this, you know, the people with bigger audience would really speak. It's good,
John,
that you do this, not
the
why you started it stuff, but it's great that you do.
No, it's why we exist. I'll tell you why, because so many people are lonely. So many people feel stigma and shame and isolation and labelled and criticised and have the piss taken out of them. And you're a boring dick because you've stopped drinking. We just want to remove all that. And, you know, like Ben said, normalise sobriety. It's okay not to drink. And it's okay that we don't need to know your reasons, you know, because it's private as well. If you want to share it, brilliant. And you today on this podcast, you have been so brutally honest, very, very honest, and that is brilliant. And the fact that you're sharing this as well to your flipping millions of followers, John, you know, there'll be somebody out there that your story will make a massive difference to. So thank you for choosing Over the Influence to talk to. We massively appreciate it.
I love the name as well.
It's good, isn't it?
It's brilliant, because I listen to people's podcasts and stuff, and I think, you know what, that's I wish I'd have thought of that. You know, this got, what's the other one? Somebody else is there. What? Minister Sobriety. What's his name? Dapper Laughs.
Oh,
Minister
Sobriety. You know what? I've been chatting to him recently, actually. So watch this face.
Yeah, he's great. I chat to him quite a bit. He's brilliant. I love his motivation, his accent. I mean, he was somebody else who got cancelled and come straight back from it. But yeah, he's doing really well. Yeah. But Minister Sobriety, I thought, what a cracking name.
It's a cracking name. It's a cracking
name. And I like
name.
All the influences also.
It's nearly as good as ours, but we'll let him have that. That's fine.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
John, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you. Like I said, I didn't get rid of your recipe books. I've still got them on the shelf. And you know what? I might just get them out this weekend and do a little bit of meal prep.
I would imagine they're stuck on a few people's dirt boards and around the country, around the world. I was getting videos of people sending, setting them on fire and everything. Literally, I was getting videos of people setting them on fire, and this is the meal prep king, and stabbing the pictures of me with knives. And I'm like,
We'll bring it back to one of my favourite sayings: the best apology is changed behaviour. John, it's been an absolute pleasure. If anybody wants to find you on social media and maybe, you know, keep an eye on your sober journey, because I know we would love to as well on Over the Influence. We'd love to have you back on maybe in 6 months' time. Where can they find you, John?
The Meal Prep King in every capacity. So that's Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, just The Meal Prep King. Or my website, www.mealprepking.co.uk.
Thank you so much to our guest this week, the meal prep king, John Clark, fellow Lancastrian as well. If you would like to follow John on his socials, all you need to do is search for the meal prep king and all the information will be there. Huge thanks as well to John for being really honest, really upfront about his story. You know, we really do appreciate it. Over the Influence. What we would appreciate as well, if you don't mind, just a quick reminder, if you enjoy what you hear, if you like the guests, if you find them inspiring, maybe they've helped you on your way with your alcohol-free journey. Maybe you're listening to this now as somebody who is completely alcohol-free. Maybe you're starting out moderating. Maybe you are sober curious. Wherever you are on your alcohol-free journey and you're finding that Over the Influence might be helping in some way, shape or form, please do head to your podcast provider and leave us a review. If you fancy 5 stars, great. Would really appreciate that. And just a few words about what the podcast, you know, has done for you so far. And as always, if you'd like any further information about our online community, we've got a whole series of events going on this year, OTI Outdoor Adventures. We've got the chat forums. We have got the Zoom calls. I think we've got something like, I'm doing my sums, 19 Zoom calls a week now. And these are held with myself, with Ben, and with some of our amazing community members. It's all online, overtheinfluence.co.uk, or feel free to ping me an email, and I promise I'll get back to you. OTIHQ@overtheinfluence.co.uk. Thank you so much for listening. Same time next week.